Welcome to the Bottom Up Revolution podcast from Strong Towns. I'm your host, Rachel Quedno. Today we're going to be talking to a pretty inspiring person who has led a very multifaceted life. Chris Harris-Wimsett went through a lot of hardship in his childhood, but he went on to become an Air Force officer, an ROTC educator, CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Kalamazoo, Michigan, and he's worked for several major companies. He's also a foster and adoptive parent to 20 children. His story blows me away. But I don't want you to approach this conversation thinking that Chris is a superhero whose feats you could never achieve. What I took away from talking with him is that he's persisted and he has faced challenges head on. Through it all, he's been dedicated to serving others, particularly in response to the ways that he himself has been served. For example, as a young person, Chris was part of the Boys and Girls Club, and that was a guiding force in his life. So as an adult, he wanted to give back, and he joined the board of the Boys and Girls Club where he lived, and later was asked to be its CEO. Chris talks about the ways that community supported him during hard times, which is what led him to his current project, creating an indoor market and food hall in his neighborhood, a space where he hopes neighbors can connect, find community, and spend time together. To me, Chris typifies a strong community builder who looks at the skills that he has and asks how he can put them to work to strengthen his neighborhood from the bottom up, empowering residents and business owners, transforming an underutilized space into a community gathering place, and all in a manner that is focused at the neighborhood level. I'm excited to share this conversation with you because Chris is an amazing person, and I think whichever parts of his story you connect with, you'll learn something from it. So here's my conversation with Chris Harris-Wimsett. Chris Harris-Wimsett, thank you for joining me for this episode of the Bottom Up Revolution podcast, led by Strong Towns. We know each other because your partner and my husband are kind of longtime friends. And while I've only gotten to meet you a couple of times, I'm so inspired by your story. And I particularly wanted to hear about this new venture that you've been working on, North Avenue Market in Milwaukee. So can you start just by telling us a little bit about yourself and the neighborhood where you live in?
Yeah, so let me sort of back up and say, how in the heck did I get here? The way that happened is my partner and I, we met through an online dating service, and I lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I was the CEO for Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Kalamazoo, Michigan, and he works here in the financial industry. After dating for a period of time, we decided that we didn't want to do the long distance thing anymore, even though it was working well for us, and we decided that we'd be in the same location. So I decided to give my job over a year notice that I was going to be relocating to Milwaukee. And as we started planning that, we said, well, what is it that I want to do? Well, my background is, I lived on my own since I was 16 years old, really probably since I was 5 or 6. I grew up in Raleigh, North Carolina, product of my mom and dad. My mom is a recovering alcoholic, and my dad left, and I've only seen him once since I was 6 in less than an hour in my entire life, so I wouldn't know him. And, you know, between the ages of 6 and 16, these things come into play because it impacts the decision that I made today. But between the ages of 6 and 16, I was molested by 13 different people, male and female, some on multiple occasions. But living on my own at 16, my last 2 years of high school, I then went off to college where I went to East Carolina University, and I majored in business administration. But I also joined ROTC my junior year of school. I had also started a Big Brother, Big Sister organization while I was on campus. Got my commission in the Air Force, served in the Air Force in a variety of different roles over a 9-year time frame. Then when I came to accept that I was gay, at that time it was don't ask, don't tell. And once I made that decision, I felt I needed to live in my own truth. So I left military, went to work for corporate. I ended up working for Vanguard Mutual Fund Company, doing several roles for them in the management realm, left there to go work for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. So I was in the pharmaceutical sales role out in San Diego, California. During that time, I was hit three different occasions in my company car. None were my fault, but we found out that I'm blind on the left side of both eyes after having had a stroke at some point. And so it's a thing called homonymous hemianopsia. Don't try to pronounce it. So that made me take some time out and say, well, what am I doing? I moved back to Colorado where I had been. I used to work at the Air Force Academy, but instead of moving to Colorado Springs, I moved to Denver. I met my now ex-husband, and that said, I'm going to get back in the corporate world, Stryker Medical Equipment Company. So now I'm in manufacturing, brought me out to do management roles for them. And I did a variety of things there. Well, throughout my life, I have been a foster parent. I became a foster parent when I was 27 years old. My first son was 16. I fostered and or adopted over 20 kids throughout my life. And being in Kalamazoo, Michigan at that time, working for Stryker, there are two different things that happened. One, my ex-husband and I decided to foster, to adopt in there. And then that connected me with Western Michigan University that eventually asked me to become the director of their program that is a targets students who have experienced foster care. It surrounds them with holistic support and it gives them scholarship opportunities to graduate with college with little or no debt. It's the largest and most comprehensive program in the country, and I did that. The other thing was that I had been inducted into my local Boys Club Hall of Fame back in North Carolina, and one of the board members of the Kalamazoo Club saw that, asked me to join their board, and I joined the board serving as secretary, vice president, president. And I was in the role of past president when they asked me to come and become the CEO of that organization. So I went from manufacturing to academia, from academia to nonprofit. And so now when you look at all these different things, some of these are knocking off some of my bucket list things along the way. But now I've worked in military, I worked in corporate, I worked in academia, I worked in nonprofit, and I've worked in manufacturing. It was time now to make the decision of what is it that I want to do in moving to Milwaukee. And that was really tough for me because none of those were really pulling at me that I was really passionate about doing. And so my partner said, hey, do whatever makes you happy and really to focus on what makes you happy. And it took me a while. After about 8 months, I went to my bucket list and I had two things on the bucket list. One was opening a bed and breakfast, but I thought that that would take both of us to do. The other was opening a coffee shop. Both of them center around building a sense of community. In all the things that I've done, in all the communities that I've been in, I've always tried to connect and add value to the community because for me to go from that kid who was molested and lived on his own and walked the streets by myself amongst a lot of other things, there was this community that was supporting me in ways that I didn't recognize at that time. And the only way that I'm able to be here today is because different people made certain sacrifices for me to get here. For instance, one of the board members on the Boys and Girls Club Board of Directors in my hometown of Ryan, North Carolina, gave me scholarship money to go to college. He'd only met me one time. You know, that changed the paradigm in my life. So there's lots of different examples of that nature. And I wanted to do something that was going to be able to bring community. The other thing that I look at is when I have worked in all these different industries, I look at the board of directors and I say, how many of them do I identify with or what can I identify from them? 95% of the time, there's not much. And so I wanted to create an environment where people, no matter where they're coming from, could feel that they could connect to the space and the place and that they can come. And if they needed to zone out, they could do that. If they needed a place to be inspired, then they would have that. If they needed a place to connect with other people, they'd be able to do that. And if they wanted to just connect with their own family, they could do that in a variety of different ways. And so those were the pieces. So I started down this trail of a coffee shop Again, the coffee shop is to create community. And I didn't want to be in downtown. I didn't want to be too far from my home. I wanted it to be walkable. We have a great community here in Washington Heights. And it's filled with restaurants and parks and bars and grocery stores that we often frequently walk to. And I wanted it to be a part of that, to pull that group. So I got a realtor. My realtor started taking me to places to lease for a coffee shop. And for me, I live on 52nd Street. I wanted it to be either on the two main roads that are less than 10 minutes from me to walk to, are North Avenue and Belit. And I wanted it to be on one of those two. We were looking for a place to lease. Eventually, we hadn't found something. He says, "Hey, I have this potential place for you to buy." And I said, "Okay, I'll check it out." We went there, my partner joined me, and it wasn't a good fit, but we looked across the street. And across the street, there was this place, there was an Associated Bank building on the corner, and it had a drive-through. And in our community, there's not a coffee shop with a drive-through. My partner, Will, had said, "Associated Bank is going to be, I just got a letter that they're closing this branch down at the end of January of 2020. And so I was like, "Wow, that looks like a great opportunity. Let's go check it out." We went in and I got a visit. I checked it out. It was over 10,000 square feet. And I thought, okay, this is a little more than a coffee shop. So how do I still stay with that same sense of community that I want to build and be able to do some things? And so I looked, I reflected back on my time having been with the Milwaukee Public Market, which I really love. Also looking at Crossroad Collectives, which is another food hall in the area. And then I checked out Sherman Phoenix, which is a food/retail hall. And each of them had a great component that I wanted to pull into what we do, and also a few twists to make it more relevant for our community and for the future and where we're going. So that's a long story, but that's how we got to this part.
Yeah, that is quite a story. And you've done so much in your life. It seems like a lot of those threads from your background are also like influencing your ability to be able to do this. Like, you have a business background, so you know kind of how to do the building blocks of a business. It sounds like the building worked out really well, but like, why this space in this neighborhood? What sort of void are you hoping to fill with, you know, building community in your neighborhood specifically?
Yeah, when you look at it, so the market is located, will be located in Uptown Crossing. So it's on the corner of 59th and North Avenue. If you cross the street on the south side of the street, then you are in a totally different community. You're in Washington Heights, which is my community. If you go one block to 60th Street and cross the street, you're in a different neighborhood. On the north side, it would be East Tosa. And if you were to go diagonally on 60th Street and cross over to the south side, you would be in Pabst Park. So you have four communities that are centrally located right there. One of the pieces is along the North Avenue side, that stretch there. The Uptown Crossing stretch is more of an up-and-coming place. And the East Tosa, you're going into different townships, it has a different vibe and feel. They're working on trying to cross over and communicate better and bring more unity across the two. But we have a ways to go to be able to get there, and it's not totally there. The other thing is that when I look, as I reflected on before, looking at the different companies and organizations that I worked at, and looking at board of directors and seeing who I can identify with, 95% of the time, I don't find anything or anyone that I can identify with. I want to have this space so that we can do that. So we will have the languages be in Spanish and English, and we're working on trying to get menus in Hmong. We want to create spaces that are more than just the verbal components, but there's some of these visual things that automatically let people know that they're embraced there. So for instance, the bar will have a 360-degree bar, and on the north end of the bar, it will be table height so that someone who's in a wheelchair can roll up to the bar and be able to still be a part of the entire community there versus that's just a space that they're not able to engage in. The building doesn't have an elevator in it. We're not required to put an elevator in it, but we'll put an elevator in it because one of the things that I also want to do is support a nonprofit that is for people who are in wheelchairs and helping all able-bodied people to be able to get up and down. So we're intentionally putting that in. So you have these things that will be here that will just instantly people will be able to connect with. From an LGBT side standpoint, we'll have different components that will be some of these non-visible things to every, I mean, they'll be visible for everyone, but you may not connect with because it's not that component that you're identifying with. And so even in our mural components that we do, we'll put in different hints of going back to when the building was built back in the 40s and pulling the history. It was a car district. We'll have some of those components partnering with the Historic Society so people can do some reflection on that. We'll look to get the community to give us any pictures from that time frame that we'll be able to connect with the market, and we'll rotate those out. When we look at all the different vendors in there, we want the vendors to not only be diverse from the food that they're serving. So we want, you know, soul food, we want Italian, we want Asian, we want a variety of different things. But we also, from a cultural standpoint, want to be able to honor some of those different pieces so that people can feel comfortable. When you look at the market, it will have 7 vendors on the main floor. We have a drive-through that we will have. And so the drive-through, one of the cool things that we're able to do with the pandemic that came about, it was how can we allow everyone in the market, because we have 18 total vendors, to be able to take advantage of the drive-through. And so we're creating this online order pickup drive-through. So you can go online, order your food, and then come through the drive-through, and you can order from multiple venues, and we'll package it all into one and then give it to you through the drive-through. So you don't even have to come into the building if you don't want to. It's just a need for the community to be able to serve there. 5 food vendors on the main floor, plus the bar area. And then we have a sitting area that has a fireplace. The fireplace will be able to be seen in and out, indoors and outside. We have outdoor seating so people can feel comfortable in that environment. We have 3 garage doors that we can open up on beautiful days and allow the outdoors in. We have a stage that is set up there so that we can do presentations, we can do classes, we can have a variety, we can do live entertainment. We have 3 different components that we can have going on at the same time. At the lower level, our garden, which we call the garden level, and it's called the 59th Street Parlor at the North Avenue Market. It has a very different vibe down there. That vibe, it has a dessert alley with 5 different dessert vendors. It has a massage and facial space there. It has a restaurant that you can order food from there. We have a speakeasy that will be in the space. And then we have 3 other vendor sections that will be over there that could be retail, it could be food, or it could be one of the things we're looking at is another activity component. So like an art component where you're painting or doing some type of artwork and have like a sip and taste at the same time. And then the space down there will be, it'll have string lights in the ceiling, and then the it'll be grass, more of an outdoor feel. Indoors for you. So it'll be a grassy pattern that'll be there with epoxy roads that will look like roads that will lead you down there. And then we have we'll have 2 bathrooms on the garden level, and we'll have 3 bathrooms on the main level. Because when a person needs to use a restroom, if they're on the garden level and they need to use a restroom, what normally happens? They go to restroom and then they just head out, or they just head out and go home and use the restroom. We want to make sure that people are comfortable and are able do the things that they want. And they can just have the garden level be its own destination. You know, 2 people can come and do a whole date night type of thing. They can go get their massages, have dinner on the garden level, eat dessert, and then do a nightcap in the speakeasy. So it gives a lot of flexibility for the community, for different spaces for people to be able to do different things depending on what they're feeling like at that moment.
Yeah, that's amazing. So many different opportunities and ways for people to connect.
what's been the process of finding those different vendors? It sounds like it'll be like a lot of kind of small businesses, maybe opportunities for like people who are getting their start with a small restaurant space or something. How has that been going?
It's been going pretty good overall with everything being considered. We've had a couple of different articles that have been done in reference to the market, and that I think has also helped generate some interest. But the city has been incredibly receptive, giving a bunch of a list of vendors that they have that have shown some interest, and they've been able to do some vetting. To be able to check out. So they gave me a list that I could also check out, and we reached out to many of them as well. We've had over 30 plus vendors to come in and do a walkthrough of what the market will look like, and have shown a great deal of interest in that. One of our vendors, Bittercube, who will manage, I will own the alcohol license and the inventory, and Bittercube will come in and they'll do the day-to-day management of the bar and the speakeasy. And they'll also manage the online drive-through order system.
Okay.
We'll have set in there. But it's just looking and being really intentional on the types of vendors that we're bringing in, and we've been able to get that message out. We've also been able to partner with WIBIC, which is WWBIC, I believe. I can't remember specifically what the abbreviation stand for, but
it's a long acronym, but it's like business, supporting businesses in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah. It's an economic development corporation, and they started out initially focused on supporting women, and then that became minorities, and it's blossomed in that sense. But after the first article was released, WIBIC reached out to me and asked if I would be interested in partnering with them to do a federal grant that then would be able to bring funds. What those funds would be able to do is all the businesses in the market would have the opportunity to get a business coach, and that they'd have that person free of charge for 3 years and all the training that would come with that. So it would help them develop their budgets, to develop their marketing plan, to manage cash flow, help them develop a long-term plan of them wanting to own their own brick and mortar place. And if that's what they want to do, how to be that bridge to get there. That's a great piece. And then it also helps with some of the financial structure that could be. So we should hear about that by the end of this month to see whether we're able to get that and do that. If we're not able to get the grant, we'll still work together to be able to help to develop and grow the businesses. But the types of businesses that we have that are coming in, some have been established for many years, to some are looking to start up. So it's a good mix. And I think that that's a healthy component of what we want to do. We don't want to have all one thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how has it been trying to start this venture during COVID? I know it's been a huge impact on so many businesses, especially things like experiential, retail and food businesses. What's that been like?
So what I'll say is, I'll use a quote from one of my sons, and I'm not saying he originated this, but he goes, "You don't know what you don't know." So for me, coming into Milwaukee, I have just found everyone to be incredibly supportive and receptive. For instance, when I worked in Kalamazoo, I had a relationship with the regional vice president for Old National Bank, and we had a great relationship. He said, "Hey, I'm going to connect you with someone there to help get you connected." We did. That led to me finding my realtor, that led to me finding my architect, that led to me getting connected with all these different things. And so this whole group has just really embraced me. I can't say that my experience is the same for most people, but I can say that this is how it's been for me. And whether it's been the alderman, whether it's been the business improvement district or the city, everyone has really been incredibly supportive. I think it also helps, as you mentioned earlier, having a business background. One of my specialties is more of project management, and I always say, keep it simple, stupid, and I'm the one who's stupid. Sorry to use that word, but I know a little about many things. My job is to bring all the smart people in and then to help to do that and then give them the platform to be able to make it into what we can. And that's what's really helped. And also with the different vendors that are looking to come in to take their ideas and to incorporate them. For instance, the online drive-through order pickup window, that idea came from a vendor, you know, having the ability for people to walk in and be able to either order from a kiosk or now they can order just from their phone or their iPad and be notified when their food is ready. That came from another vendor. Having, you know, some of the multi-language components of the space, that came from a different vendor. So it's just been incorporating these pieces. And that's the way the market will be run, is that we'll have monthly ownership meetings to talk about what we're doing. My comments to them is that we're only as strong as our weakest link. So we have to work together. The bar, for instance, will tailor drink items to the food vendors that are selling food. So if you have a specialty food order, then you can have a cocktail that actually matches up with that. So looking at how do we partner together and that we're not 18 independent groups, but we're one team seeking to support each other. And by supporting each other, we're able to grow our own business.
That's beautiful. So to close, do you have any advice for other people who might, you know, maybe aren't able to do something at the scale you're doing, but just who have a passion for supporting local businesses and building community in some way wherever they live? Do you have any advice?
My first thing would be start with your strengths. Don't try to be something that you're not. I've never operated a food hall or retail hall or in, you know, any food business in a sense. But my strengths are in pulling people together and getting the right people to do it. And so the question then, how do I fill those gaps? And then surrounding myself with, you know, with a team that can do that. And so that's what I would say is if you have a passion, you can do your passion. And where you have your gaps, it's not trying to become experts in those things because they may not be your strengths. But finding people that can help you, that you can trust and be able to do that. And don't be afraid to ask for help, but also make sure you vet it.
So Chris Harris-Wimsett, thank you so much for joining me today. Chris is the founder of North Avenue Market, and you can learn more by visiting northavmkt.com. I'll put that link in the notes for everybody. Chris, thanks for sharing your wisdom, and I'm excited to see how this takes shape over the next few months.
I'm totally ecstatic, Rachel. I am grateful to have the honor of being on your show, and if there's anything that I can do to help you or to support someone else, please don't hesitate to let me know, and I'll do the best that I can.
Thank you so much. I hope you found something to learn or be inspired by from Chris's story. And I'll make sure to share some updates as his market progresses towards opening. Switching gears now, today's listener voicemail / email submission comes from Andrew Kelsey in Keyport, New Jersey. Andrew writes, "About 3 years ago, I was motivated to create a study of available parking in our central business district after hearing how so many people thought there wasn't enough parking. It was a fairly simple affair. I established a zone that was within a 5-minute walking distance of the commercial properties and counted all the spaces. I did all of this from my home using Google Earth and Google Street View. I then shared it with my town council. Not too long after, I was asked if I'd be interested in chairing a parking committee to work on the issue in more detail. I've been waiting patiently ever since for that to happen. While the slow movement on this has been excruciatingly painful, I spent the time studying the topic of parking to better serve my community when the time comes. On an unrelated note, about a year or so ago, I began recording our town council meetings with my cell phone and posting them on YouTube. The videos attract an additional 2 to 3 dozen people every meeting that wouldn't have been able to participate otherwise. Andrew, it's so inspiring to hear about how you took this simple step, one that I think anyone could do on their home computer, and really dug into the realities of available parking in your downtown. It's also great to learn that your city leadership took your input seriously, and I hope that that parking committee comes to fruition soon. Helping fellow residents get plugged into what's happening in town council meetings is also such a huge service to your community. Nice job. Friends, if you've got a story to share about what you're doing to make your town stronger, please know that no action is too small. We'd love to hear from you. Write me an email or record a voicemail and send it to rachel@strongtowns.org, and your story could be shared in our next episode. Really quick, before we wrap up, I want to make you aware of an upcoming event here. Andrew's email came at the perfect time because next week is Strong Town's annual Black Friday parking event. In typical years, we invite you all to go out to the parking lots in your town the day after Thanksgiving and take pictures to show how empty they are, even on such a huge shopping day, as a way to prove just how unnecessary all this parking is. Of course, Black Friday parking is going to look a bit different in 2020, but in many ways, this is just the natural progression of these parking lots as shopping moves more and more online. Of course, we know that such huge parking lots were not really needed in the first place. So we're going to be talking more about parking problems and successes like Andrew's next week on strongtowns.org, and we'll give you a chance to engage in some photo taking and sharing with a new twist, which might not even require you to leave your home if you don't want to. Stay tuned on our website for more details. Finally, a quick reminder that our podcast and all our efforts at Strong Towns are supported financially by members like you. Most of our donations come in amounts like $5 or $10 a month. And actually this month, we've got a very cool offer going. If you join as a member just this week or next, you will receive a free Strong Towns t-shirt. We just released 3 awesome t-shirt designs. We worked with a really talented designer on these, and they're available. You get your pick of them if you support us at the $10 a month or more level. Head to strongtowns.org/membership to sign up now. Thank you so much for your support. All right, that's our show for today. See you back here for the next episode of the Bottom Up Revolution. Take care, guys.